Welcome to Odds Bodkins Curiosity Shop, where you'll find the unique, the bizarre, and sometimes the haunted. Feel free to look around, peruse the items, and never fear, there's nothing here that bites. Hard anyway. Hello there, welcome to Odds Bodkins Curiosity Shop. I am your shopkeeper, Chris Baker, and today an interesting collection I thought I would show you. Of course, many people like to collect bugs, butterflies, all sorts of various insects and species, but over here we have a particular collection that just came to the shop. It is a collection of spiders, all mounted and pinned. As you'll see, some known, some unknown, and some quite terrifying, but not as terrifying as some spiders could be. And therein lies the web we weave with today's episode of Odds Bodkins Curiosity Shop. So let's pull out the kinetoscope and take a look at the new film, Sting. So it was kind of an interesting weekend for yours truly when it came to what I wanted to talk about this week. And I'll say Sting was a movie that I thought looked really good, and Arcadian was a movie that I really wanted to check out and hopefully talk about on the podcast. The unfortunate thing is both of those movies came out this past weekend, and neither one of them was playing in the theater in the town with which I live, in the Conneaut Lake, Meadville area of Pennsylvania. So I had to do some looking around, and I found that there is a movie theater up in Erie, Pennsylvania. It's about a 40-minute drive from where I live, and I thought, okay, I can go up there and see that. I'll see if my wife minds if I essentially spend the day and kind of coordinate the start times of each movie and then watch one of the movies and then go buy another ticket and watch the second movie kind of back to back, do like a double feature, which I have not done yet since doing this podcast. I've gone on back to back days, but never watched two movies in the same day. But she was all on board because that meant we could go up to Erie together. She could drop me off at the movie theater and then she could go shopping because she had no interest in watching either one of these horror films. So we did it and it worked out. And I was really glad I got to see both of these movies in general. But at the theater, I thought theater experience is always fantastic, in spite of the fact that some people just cannot keep their effing mouths shut during a movie. If you're one of those people that talks during a movie, whether you're talking to your buddy or you're just running commentary and making comments, fuck you. Because, you know, I go to the movie theater to watch the movie, not listen to you run your fucking mouth. So if you're one of those people, fuck you. With all due respect, fuck you. And keep your fucking mouth shut. Everyone else is trying to watch the movie. Nobody gives a shit what you have to say. If you got comments about the movie, start a fucking podcast and do it after the movie's over. But at any rate, I got to watch both of these movies and loved both of them. I thought both Sting and Arcadian, which we'll talk about on Thursday. Today we're going to talk about Sting, and it really harkens back to some of those great creature features from like the 50s and the 60s, some of those movies like Them and the giant spider movies and the giant insects movies that we got in that time. Usually it was something from outer space or something that evolved from nuclear testing. And it really felt like one of those quasi-cheesy B movies from that era. Although they treated this with a little bit of tongue-in-cheek of that era, a little bit of the cheekiness and the cheesiness and the camp of that era, but they did it in all seriousness. I mean, this was a serious drama that played out with this kind of campy spider monster movie. And I thought it all worked so well on so many different levels that it really was a joy to watch. And the cast was really good. I really didn't know much about these cast members. I mean, some of them I recognized from places, but they all just really nailed this story. So we're going to talk about this movie. I don't want to spend too much time not talking about it. So we're going to have to get into some spoiler territory. So if you've watched Sting or you don't care about spoilers, you can press on with me. But if you don't want anything spoiled for you, I really encourage you to go check out Sting and then come back and hear my thoughts on it. And hopefully you enjoy it as much as I did, because I really loved this movie. So, well, without further ado, we are going to head into some spoiler territory. So one of the things that I loved about this is the opening of this movie. And I have to say, with both of these movies that we're going to be talking about this week, Sting and Arcadian, I think both movies did a really good job of not over-explaining thing and really getting to the heart of the story quickly and succinctly and not getting lost in trying to explain too much. I mean, the beginning of this movie, you hear a bit of a news broadcast where they're talking about there's this big ice storm in New York City and it's the worst this city has seen in forever. And everyone's kind of snowed in, essentially, and they wonder if it has anything to do with this meteor field that they pass through. And then all of a sudden you see a meteor coming and it crashes into an apartment building, and the little meteor, we think it's a meteor, but it turns out to be some sort of pod, crashes into this dollhouse, and you see the pod open up and this looks like a regular spider crawls out. So obviously this is not just a regular spider. This is some sort of alien creature that has landed on Earth. And that's all the explanation we need. We don't need any more explanation. It's aliens. Sometimes that works in something like this. In Indiana Jones and Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, doesn't work so much. But in this, that works. And I love the opening sequence, the title sequence, the opening credits was really cool, because you had this spider walking around in this dollhouse. And of course, the spider in this small dollhouse looks like a giant spider. And it really kind of foreshadows things to come throughout the rest of the movie. And you see this what looks like a giant spider walking around inside this dollhouse being very creepy. And like I said, it really set up where we go from here on out. And it was such a fun opening credit sequence that I knew as soon as I saw this is a movie that understands what it is. They are not taking themselves too serious, but they're taking it serious enough that I think I'm going to get some really good scares and hopefully some really good storytelling. And that's exactly what we got with this. And the first act of this movie, you really get a sense of who is in this apartment complex. It's an old rundown apartment building. You get to meet our main family, Ethan and Heather, their kind of tween girl, Charlotte, and the baby. I can't remember the baby's name. And the thing about this ice storm that's going on that has them kind of quarantined, it really did feel like the quarantine era of COVID, that sense of isolation. Everyone is working, you know, Heather and Ethan are both working from home. So you have, you know, it's not even one of those situations where the kid gets left alone and all these horror hijinks happen. The family is all there together for the most part throughout this movie. So you really get a good sense of this family dynamic and how it interacts with the horrors that are happening. And even under their own noses, the parents don't necessarily understand what their daughter Charlotte is doing. But that was one of the more enjoyable aspects of this, and I think made this a movie that I really enjoyed, was the family dynamic that they put together. You have Heather, played by Penelope Mitchell, not an actress I'm familiar with anything she's done, but she looked very familiar. Ryan Kaur plays Ethan, their husband and wife. And of course, if you don't know him, he played one of the strong brothers in the House of the Dragon, the one that died at Harrenhal. But their husband and wife, Charlotte, is Ethan's stepdaughter, played by Lila Brown, and not a young actress I'm very familiar with. I know she had a small role in the new adaptation of Children of the Corn, but I fucking hated that movie, so I'm not going to say anything about that. But she is really good in this, and I love the dynamic between her and her stepfather, Ethan. They have a very, not a love-hate relationship. He is trying everything he can to be a stepfather to her, to be a father to her, because her ran out on her and her mother. She idolizes him because he is an illustrator for comics, and she is into comics now that he's come along and coming up with stories that he's using for his comics. And it's a really interesting relationship from a creative standpoint for anybody that is into writing or illustrating comics. I think you'll dig that relationship between the two of them, especially if you're an adult who does that for a living and you have a child that's kind of wanting to follow in your footsteps. It has that feel of that. And she idolizes him. She wants to be like him because he's the father she hasn't had. But she still romanticizes her dad in a way that kind of keeps him at arm's length, keeps Ethan at arm's length. So they have a really interesting and multifaceted, a complex relationship that I really enjoyed watching that. To see the dramatic dynamic of that play out on the screen made me care about these characters. The other characters, the mother and the baby, you care about them kind of by proxy, but these two characters and their relationship made me care about the people that I'm supposed to care about. And that was all in the writing and all in the performance of these actors. And I also think it was a smart thing to place this story inside an old apartment building, because with that, you got a lot of these eclectic characters. You got a lot of these different people that you knew, okay, this is just fodder for the creature. You had Danny Kim playing Eric. He's kind of a biology student, and he's working on experiments, and he's the reason the spider gets as big as it does. You have Sylvia Coloco playing Maria. She's kind of an interesting character. You don't know much about her other than she's apparently lost a child and she's an alcoholic. So it's, you know, a character you get a little taste of who they are, but they don't delve into very much because they're, again, just fodder for the monster. But everybody has pets. There's the grandmother of Charlotte and her sister, her grandmother's sister. They own the apartment complex. So a lot of interesting characters. You also have the character played by Jermaine Fowler, Frank. He's an exterminator that comes. And I thought one of the interesting aspects of the grandmother, Helga, she has it almost feels like Alzheimer's or dementia, where she doesn't remember things. She has virtually no short-term memory, and she keeps calling back this exterminator, not realizing she had already called him. But Jermaine Fowler, I didn't know him except for he was one of the characters in that Amazon Prime movie, Ricky Stenicki with John Cena, and he was really funny in this, had a lot of comic relief. And this, you know, this is one of those movies where it is a horror movie, but it does have some moments of levity that kind of break the tension, and he added a lot to that. But the real star of this movie to me was the spider that Charlotte finds and realizes there's something different about this spider because it almost vocalizes. And she finds that it's a bit of a mimic, which kind of leads into it luring its prey later, which I thought was an interesting aspect. I mean, it's an alien. It can do whatever it wants. Spiders don't have vocal capabilities, but this isn't a regular spider. But she names it Sting after the sword in The Hobbit, which I thought was kind of a cool nerd fantasy reference. But one of the things I really dug about this, and I think it's why I like Arcadian just as much, is because they used a lot of digital effects. There was a lot of CGI in this movie, but they also married it with some practical effects. And there were some practical things going on here that I didn't expect. Usually with giant spider movies, I did that with this. I automatically wrote it off when I saw, oh, giant spider, it's going to be completely CG and it's going to look horrible. And I have to say, once I rewatched the trailer and I watched it closely, I was like, actually, the effects on this might not be so bad. And when I finished watching the movie, I was really taken aback by how well they did not only the visual effects, but the practical effects, the puppetry that they used to create this spider, and kind of the combination of both. I know they had Weta Workshop do some of the special effects, if not all of the special effects for this. And Weta, of course, known for so many great movies, not the least of which the Lord of the Rings movies. And they did a fantastic job with bringing this spider to life. There were some moments where it did come across as, well, that's obviously CG. But then there were moments where I was like, oh, that's really hard to tell if that's CG or if it's puppetry or if that's a real giant spider. And I like that. I love the fact that they also didn't reveal their hand too early. They showed the spider when it's a little tiny spider, and it was all CG. But once the spider started getting bigger, that's when they started showing it hunting. And you got a lot of POV shots of it crawling through the ductwork. And you got a lot of shots that were kind of like the spider is partially hidden, hidden from view. They did a lot of shots where it's kind of in the shadows and you only get little glimpses of imagery of this spider, or maybe it's in the background and out of focus. And I think shots like that were really smart because they didn't, one, reveal the spider, the giant spider, too soon. They left you to wonder about what this thing looks like. And they also did it in a way that didn't emphasize the fact that this is a CG spider. When you do things that are in the background and slightly out of focus, it does a good job in hiding the fact that it is CG. And even good CG sometimes needs a little help in that regard. And they did a wonderful job with not revealing their hand too soon with the spider and allowing this spider reveal at the end to be as horrific as it was. And as you would expect with any movie like this, with a giant spider stalking people, you did have a little bit of a body count. You did have a good amount of gore. Not only did they have people, but there were pets. There was like the grandmother's bird, the great aunt's cat, I believe. There was a little dog that was, I think it was Maria's dog, that you thought it was going to meet its untimely demise sooner or later, but it didn't. And they even had like a, I think the mid-credit scene was that this dog did survive and is alive and well. But they had some gory reveals with the pets. You had some gore with Maria being attacked by this spider. And that's the one we got probably the best look. And it was back when the spider was still relatively small. And it was disgusting and gory, the spider biting her and crawling in her mouth and then bursting its way through her stomach. And then the reveal when they find her body later, it was disgusting, much like the Eric character when we see his body discovered later. They kept a lot of the kills off camera, but you got to see the results of these kills, which were some, you know, a cross between some good body horror like the Maria character, that and, you know, practical effects of these bodies that are being digested from the inside out, essentially. But as I said earlier, one of the things I liked the most about this is the fact that they didn't try to over-explain it. This is a creature from another world that has crash-landed on Earth. I liked the fact that they introduced the mothballs really early, and you see that the mothballs kind of deteriorate the webbing. It's almost like a, it's not even really webbing, it's some sort of weird substance because aliens. But they establish right away that mothballs deteriorate the webbing and that the spider creature is afraid of it. So it gives Charlotte something to fight back later. I thought that was fun. They didn't need to explain why mothballs. Why not mothballs? And I loved that scene there in the third act when the shit started to go down, where the spider has taken Ethan, taken her mother, taken her baby brother, and Charlotte's got to nut up and go get her family back. It reminded me a lot of those movies, Monster Squad and Lost Boys, and maybe not so much Goonies, but movies where kids are thrust into adult situations and they've got to be the one to save the day. And she crushes up the mothballs and puts it in her super soaker and gets bottles of mothball water and she's going to fight this. And it was a fun battle between the two. It really wasn't overextended. And once you saw that trash compactor at the beginning of the movie, where Ethan, he's kind of the maintenance guy, the supervisor of the building, he's trying to get this trash compactor to work. I'm like, oh, that's how the spider's going to die. And that's very much how it, I mean, that spider got killed Terminator style. But I didn't mind that. I saw it coming away a mile away, but I didn't mind it because I knew it was going to be disgusting when it happened. And it was every bit as disgusting as I thought it was going to be. Goo spraying everywhere. And I thought it was a fun end to this movie. And it was a movie where it didn't have to have our main characters, anyone from our main family dying. You wanted a happy ending for this family. It wasn't that type of movie that had to end on a down note. Although it did end on a note that made you think, oh shit. Because the camera pans over to this corner where this spider has laid a bunch of eggs that are about to hatch. And you also have to wonder, how many other of these spiders, these everyone thought were meteors, came through? Not just the one in New York City. Maybe some other places had some of these. And this could be a real problem in the future. Not to say that they're going to do a sequel to this, although I think, you know, you could do it. I don't think it needs it, though, because this was just a fun, isolated horror story. A giant spider monster movie that did almost everything right. It had a wonderful dramatic story, a family story that made you care about these people. You cared about what happened to them. You had a giant spider that they did a good job in hiding it long enough to build up tension. And then the reveals were quick, but then once you finally got that full reveal of this giant spider at the very end, it really would. I'm going to be quite frank with you. I hate spiders. I am not deathly afraid of spiders, but I don't like spiders. Even right now, as I'm in my recording studio, I'm looking around because sometimes when the weather gets warmer, spiders start to come out and I'll see one crawling across the carpet. Creeps me out every time. I'm man enough to do what has to be done and kill it. No scooping it up in a jar and taking it outside to live its best life out in the wild. It knew what it was getting into when it came into my territory, so no regrets there, but I don't like spiders, suffice to say. And this movie creeped me out and really played on that fear of spiders that a lot of people have. And like I said, it knew what it was. There was enough cheekiness and enough camp to make this a fun horror movie. It was fun scares. It had a lot of jump scares, but they were mostly a part of the storytelling. There were some fake out jump scares, but I almost liked it. You know, you would see somebody looking and they see these spindly leg shadows on the wall and they jump and they turn around and it's just a plant hanging from a basket in the ceiling. And they did some jump scares like that, which under normal circumstances, those fake out jump scares I don't like, but these were fun. They were done in such a cheesy, campy way that it made it that much more enjoyable. So ultimately, I got to tip my hat to writer-director Kai Roche Turner. He wrote and directed this, and it was such a fun movie and such a, I don't know. I don't want to say refreshing. I mean, I don't think he broke any new ground, but he just did what he was doing and did it well. And that's all you can ask for. You don't have to have the wheel reinvented with every horror movie. Just do what you're doing. Understand what you're doing and just do it well and do it to the best of your ability. And I think he did that. It was a story that wasn't overly complicated. It didn't have to be overly complicated, and he didn't waste time overcomplicating things, trying to explain things, explaining where this thing came from, explaining why mothballs hurt it. It just is, and you're just thrust into the middle of this, and you're given just enough to get by, and that's all right because you're so captivated by the story, by the characters first. The characters draw you in, and then the circumstances they find themselves in keep you there, keep you locked there, worrying about what's going to happen next, what's going to happen to these people that I care about. And a wonderful job from that standpoint. Great, creepy, claustrophobic atmosphere, tension for days. This movie just had a lot of things that I'm really looking forward to in a horror movie. And I would have to say this and Arcadian, probably two of my favorite horror movies of 2024. I don't know about a top five, but definitely these movies would be in my top 10. As of right now, probably top five. But, you know, we're still early in the year. We're not even halfway through 2024, so I don't want to go too far out on a limb, but definitely an enjoyable horror film and a fun horror film that gives you enjoyment and scares all at the same time. So I want to thank everyone for listening to my thoughts on Sting. You can check out more about what's going on with Odds Bodkins Curiosity Shop on our Instagram page, as well as our Facebook page, always posting about the genres that we love, as well as the latest episodes, including what we've got coming up, Arcadian, on Thursday's episode of Odds Bodkins Curiosity Shop. No matter where you listen to this podcast, like, follow, subscribe to it, whatever it calls it, do that so you can stay on top of all the latest drops, as well as leaving those reviews 5 stars would be awesome. But whatever review you leave, we do appreciate that more than you will ever know. So until next time, thank you for visiting Odds Bodkins Curiosity Shop. We hope that you found something to your liking and visit the shop again soon. But even though you may come back, you never really get to leave Odds Bodkins Curiosity Shop.